Welcome into the NHL At The Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here and Sean Rourke out there. Sean, the playoffs are in full swing. Five teams advanced, three still to go as we record this on Thursday morning. It's been a good run so far. I mean, this has been a heck of a start. We got a sweep. We got a game seven coming up. We got the defending champs moving on. Lots to talk about here.
Couple of upsets, lots of overtime. It's a perfect recipe for playoffs. A little later than normal. The weather's already way nicer than it normally would be in the first round, but it literally has been a perfect recipe for interest in the playoffs because it's had a bit of everything. And I'm just riveted every night.
We are joined by our columnist, Nick Kotsenika, today. He's going to jump in for the whole show, Nick. So let's bring in Nick covering the Vegas-Minnesota series, obviously from his home office. We're not traveling just yet, but Nick, let's just touch on that one first because we've got a game seven coming up. Minnesota's here 1-2 in a row. How are you? How's that series, man?
Series is good. Everything's great except for my picks, which are struggling again. Series is good. And I think we've got a very interesting game seven, especially from the Vegas perspective. I think Vegas has a lot more to lose than Minnesota. They're in danger of being a team that, you know, can't quite get it done. This is the third year in a row that they've taken a 3-1 lead in a series. We all know that they blew it against San Jose in epic fashion a couple of years ago. They did beat Vancouver last year, but that set up a Western Conference final where they didn't play, you know, they couldn't score and lost to Dallas. So if they lose this game and lose another series, they led 3-1, losing the first round after acquiring Pietrangelo, after acquiring Leonard, after, you know, keeping Fleury, after everything that they've done to win, I think it's going to be a very bitter pill to swallow.
It's unbelievable. We're talking about a team that's not even 5 years old.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a disappointment that they've made the playoffs each year, gotten to a Stanley Cup final. Like, no other team has had a bar set as high as this team has. And they've done some of it to themselves with their early success and then the failures that have come behind it. But I think on day one, going back to the expansion draft when we were all in Vegas and you walked through the stands and you said to any of those fans, hey, in your first couple of years, you'll have a Stanley Cup final. You'll have three game seven playoffs. You'll have made the playoffs every year. They would all sign up no matter what the outcome was.
No question. But they did succeed early, and it's not just their success. It's the moves they've made, right? Like, they've been ultra aggressive. They've brought in big name players. They've set the bar themselves. Now, I do, in fairness to them, you know, I think they drew the worst possible matchup. Minnesota was not a good matchup for them. And now you're down Max Pacioretty, which is a blow. Like, when you're struggling to score in the playoffs and you don't have your leading goal scorer, I think that's an issue. So I think a couple things have gone against them. But, you know, the other trend with Vegas is, you know, they can dominate possession. They can throw lots of pucks on net. Or at least shot attempts in this series, you know, shot blocking has been a big deal, but they can't put the puck in the net. And it's becoming a problem. And they talked about it last year. We got to find different ways to score, and they haven't done it enough in this series. They got one more game to do it, or else they're going to be answering more questions.
Yeah, no, I mean, like you said, not having Pacioretty hurts there. I mean, he's their leading goal scorer. So hard, you know, missing your leading goal scorer and struggling to score, they kind of go hand in hand at times. But you said it, Nick, this was a bad matchup for them. And not to say that they're not going to win game seven, but let's put it out there. I mean, they're at home, they're the favorite, they should win game seven, all of that. But this was a tough matchup for them. They had struggled with Minnesota in the regular season. You've got Minnesota that all of a sudden started to realize, I think about halfway through the season, that the future, while bright, is actually right now. Like, they can do this right now. And that's why, as we were going through the regular season, that first place in the division was so important. Vegas had it. Colorado had the COVID issues and all these issues and injury issues. McKinnon was out and all this stuff. And Vegas couldn't corral it. They couldn't take it all. And if they did, they'd be sitting pretty right now. And Colorado would be in this fight.
Just the way the matchups were, I think if Colorado plays Minnesota, Colorado wins. And I think if Vegas plays St. Louis, Vegas wins. Mm-hmm. And you get that Colorado-Vegas matchup, right? But that's not how it worked out. And, you know, from a Minnesota perspective, you know, what a great year, become a fun team to watch with Kaprizov. And, but that's the fun part about this series is they're tied with Vegas, and Kaprizov and Fiala and Hartman haven't really done a lot. Like, they've finally started to heat up the last couple games. But it's not like they've been the driving force here. So I still think there's a lot of room for Minnesota to play better.
Yeah, and, you know, when I look at the series, the thing that strikes me is Vegas had a chance to really get after Talbot. Mm-hmm. He had come into the playoffs, and he was a mess. He had given up four or more goals multiple times in the last six games leading into the playoffs. There were huge questions about what was going to happen in their goal crease, and they couldn't. And they let him get his confidence. He's got two shutouts in the series. He was fantastic last night. And now I think if you're Vegas and you're going into a game seven, yeah, maybe you think you have the advantage because you're going into the fortress and it's going to be crazy. And you think you have more talent, but you're also looking at a goalie that shut you out twice. And now your stick's turning into sawdust. And that's a huge problem. So they could have got on Talbot early and they weren't able to do it. And I think that's been the biggest thing in the series.
Well, look. Probably last thing on this series, but Vegas's record in closeout games is pretty poor. I think they're 2-8 in their last 10, and they've never closed a series at home. So we'll see.
Pete DeBoer is 5-0 in game seven, though.
Before we move on, Nick, who's in goal for Vegas in game seven?
To me, it's still got to be Fleury, but it's a question that needs to be asked, right? Like, I think, you know, the whole, I don't think Fleury's to blame. Certainly last game, I mean, they didn't score any goals, right? I don't think they were bad goals, but like, you know, all along, DeBoer said, we've got two number one goalies. We're going to use them both. You know, Fleury's, what, 36 years old, really 37. Like, do you play the fresh goalie? You know, that was supposed to be a weapon. So, you know, they've put themselves in a position where it's a luxury, but it's also a curse, right? Like, you got to make a decision. I think it's a legitimate question to be asked, and I doubt Pete's going to answer it. But if it were me, it'd be Fleury, but you really got to sit down and think about it. Considering you could have a fresh goalie who's pretty accomplished, you know, and maybe a spark for your team.
I think it's Fleury. I think he is. I actually think it's Fleury. I think he's the emotional leader of the team, and I think you got to start him. But let's quickly flip to Colorado. Avalanche are waiting for them right now. And the only thing with Colorado that I worry about here is, does this long layoff slow them down, slow momentum? I mean, they were skating laps around the St. Louis Blues. It wasn't close. And St. Louis can say what they want. The Blues, we're not that far off this championship court. They were not in that series. They were not close at all. And that's how good Colorado is. But my one concern now is, does this slow the Avalanche down? Is it going to take them time to ramp it back up? You're going to play a team that's coming in, feeling great, whoever wins game seven. So that is the one concern I have. But I do think either way, no matter if it's Minnesota or Vegas, I think Colorado is, I think they're the team to beat in the entire National Hockey League. And they proved that in the first round.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we always have the rust versus rest debate in situations like this, but I think this season with everything that's gone on and the compressed schedule, I would lean on the rest side. Like if I'm Colorado, I'm sitting back, feet up with a beverage, loving this. Like, all right, go ahead guys, beat each other up, you know, play eight overtime. So I don't care. Like, plus, you know, Colorado always seems to be banged up always, right? So let them heal up, let them rest. I think they're the team to beat. Like, I really do. You know, Tampa now, I'm sure we'll talk about Tampa later. I'm not going to discount Tampa, but I think Colorado is a scary team. And if I'm them, I'm loving this situation.
And I don't think anything slows down Colorado. I mean, just on a speed thing, like, to me, that was the thing that struck me the most is how fast they play. They're playing in another dimension than almost any other team I can think of in the league. And they're killing with speed. So fresh legs will make that even worse.
It will. It will make it worse. So, all right. So they wait, Vegas or Minnesota. And now, Nick, you mentioned it, Tampa Bay. Let's get right to that series now. That's the one that I've been covered. It's over now. They're waiting too. You know, Carolina up 3-2 against Nashville. Game six is tonight, Thursday night. The Tampa Bay Lightning showed to me in game six last night, Wednesday night, they showed their championship medal. They showed who they are. It was a team that had experience in these situations. Let's not forget against the Islanders in the Eastern Conference Final last year, up 3-1. They lose game five. They go ahead and they play and win game six in overtime. against Dallas, up 3-1. They lose game 5 in the Stanley Cup final. Shutout, 2-0, game 6, win the Stanley Cup. Again, against Florida, up 3-1. Play their worst game of the series in game 5. Lose 4-1. Absolutely, Florida deserved to win that game. It could have been worse even. Spencer Knight was terrific, but after the first period, you know, Tampa Bay just had nothing. Florida was great. What happens? Tampa Bay, the championship team, comes back and plays a near perfect game 6, wins it 4-0. They wait for an opponent, but they are now out of that first round, which is the hardest round for the defending champs to get out of. And if you look at the last 10 years, 6 of the defending champs didn't get out of the first round. One, LA, didn't make it to the playoffs in 2015 after winning in 2014. Other 5, we haven't seen it happen since Pittsburgh did it in 2018. So hard for the defending champs to get out of the first round. They do. I mean, now they are showing their, who they are. They're showing that why they're the champs.
I overthought this one, right? So Tampa's coming down the stretch. And, you know, they were okay this year. And you've got Stamkos and Kucherov coming back, right? And I'm like, you know, things often don't go like you think. You know, there's the Russ versus Russ. Like, Kucherov hasn't played in forever. Stamkos is his health is always in question. Like, how's the chemistry going to be? Like, Florida, I overthought it, right? And Kucherov comes back, looks fantastic, right? That power play is lethal. And you're right. Like the first round is always tricky. But once you get over that hurdle, I think it's hard to say it becomes easier, but I guess you just have more confidence. Right. So now, you know, my only question with them is they're still loose defensively at times. You know, I thought Florida blew that series in game 1. You know, I think they had 4 goals on Vasilevsky in game 1 and they lost if memory serves. Like, you blew an opportunity there. And to me, that was the series. You just no margin for error against a team like Tampa like that. So I really like them. I know we don't have East and West, but I still sort of think that way. I kind of really like them in the East, especially now that they're over that hurdle.
Yeah, no. And before we move on, though, we have to talk about Florida for a minute. Like, they lost, and they lost game 6 in complete dominating fashion. What a good showing they put on. Like, to me, and I said this last night on Twitter, thank God hockey fans across North America got to see what kind of player Huberto is. I mean, people kind of knew what Barkov brought, but my God, Jonathan was unbelievable in the series. He had 10 points. You know, there were times he didn't score yesterday or get a point. They got shut out. But there were times when he was out there for a minute and 20 seconds, just dominating almost all by himself. I remember there was one play where he had 3 chances. The puck came out into the neutral zone. Weegar got it. And Huberto was standing at the blue line, smashing his stick on the ice, like, give it back to me. I don't care about anybody else. I'm going to go and do this. And that's the player he is. And everybody, whenever you bring him up, everybody's always like, he's kind of a second tier guy. He's not a second tier guy.
Agreed. And I love, you know, I love that it's become a real rivalry, right? And maybe not the cheap stuff, but just love the passion and the physicality and the skill and the speed. I'm a little, you know, I love the Panthers' future. I'm, you know, wonder, you know, is Spencer Knight ready right now to take over? What do you do in goal? That's a big question. I am a little disappointed, though, just as a, you know, a hockey fan, like, I'm not rooting against Tampa. I love to watch Tampa, one of the, you know, best teams in the league to watch. But, like, you kind of wish that the Panthers had shown even a little better, right? If not won the series, just because this is a team that we've been waiting on and waiting on and waiting on and waiting on. And it's always about the future. I was hoping for a little more now.
They were too. No question about it. It is about the future, though. And Nick, you brought it up. The biggest question that the Florida Panthers have is the goaltending question. Mm-hmm. Spencer Knight looked good. I mean, Spencer Knight was 4-0 in the regular season. It's a very small sample size, but he looked good. He looked really good in two starts in the playoffs. You can't fault him, I don't think, for much in game 6. He's poised. Listening to him talk, you know, after each of those games, he's an intelligent guy. He's very confident, poised. I loved what he said after game 6 when he said, yeah, this could be, he was asked about, you know, what this can do for his growth and development as a professional. He said, yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure that it will play a role, but I wasn't coming in here just to get experience. I wanted to win. Like, this was about winning hockey games right now. And that's all I'm thinking about. And yeah, 2-3 weeks from now, it'll pay off. Maybe I'll think about the other stuff. But right now, he was in it to win it. And I think that's important. He's got that mentality. But you have Sergei Bobrovsky. He's signed for 5 more years, $50 million more, $10 million a year. And here's this 20-year-old kid who you drafted before you signed Bobrovsky, by the way. Figure that one out. What do you do in goal if you're the Florida Panthers?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to second guess that now, right? Now, if my memory serves, my memory is poor. I believe Florida had maybe the worst even strength save percentage in the league. Bobrovsky had the best even save strengths or save percentage over, you know, 8 years or something when they signed him. Right now, I still thought at the time, man, that's a lot of dollars for a goalie. And we all know how that goes in the NHL, and it's proven to be the case. But yeah, I mean, they're in a bind here because I don't know who's going to take that contract. Like, what do you do? So I'm a terrible judge of goaltending. Goaltending's a difficult position anyway to evaluate. Is, you know, it's an incredibly small sample size. I think Knight is the real deal. He's going to be. Is he the real deal next season to be number one? I honestly can't answer that. I don't know.
Well, Carter Hart's the cautionary tale there, yeah. Right? You know, I mean, isn't he the, you know, you hand him the reins in Philadelphia where goaltending has long time been an issue. He's very young. He shows himself well the season before, and then he struggles this season. So it's not easy. I'm not sitting here and saying that Spencer Knight comes into next season and should be the Florida Panthers' number one goaltender. But what I think they need to try to do here is pave the way for that to possibly happen sooner rather than later. And if Bob is sitting there, they're not, that's going to be a very difficult thing to happen.
You get Driedger too.
No, he's a UFA. I don't see how they signed Driedger.
You're right. You're right.
I don't see it. So here's the question. Like, Bob's playoff record is what his playoff record is, right? But I'll put this out there to both of you guys. Can you make a deal with Seattle? He's a very good goaltender, right? Can you work a deal with Seattle where Bobrovsky goes to Seattle and becomes their first franchise goaltender and really helps stabilize an entire... I mean, he's a good goaltender, and you eat some of that salary? Because you're not going to have to pay Spencer Knight for a long time.
I doubt it. Only if they eat a ton of it. But like, if I'm Seattle, my biggest advantage is my cap space. I have a clean cap in an era of a flat cap. So the only way that I take on Bobrovsky is if they eat a ton of salary and they give me some juicy assets. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to have to pay up. Like, and that's what I'm doing if I'm Ron Francis. I'll take your problems, but you're going to have to make it worth my while, right? Give me some first rounders. Give me some prospects. Give me players. Like, and I'm going to drive a hard bargain, right? And that's the leverage he has. So the only way I take Bob is if they really make it worth my while.
And also, I mean, look, you look back at Vegas, right? And Marc-Andre Fleury was a no-brainer, kind of in the same situation where there were guys coming behind him and they had to figure out what they were going to do with their goaltending. But for Vegas, Marc-Andre was so much more than their starting goalie, right? Mm-hmm. He was going to be the face of the franchise. He was going to be in the community. He was going to drive their message. I don't know that Sergei Bobrovsky's that type of player. He's a good goalie, and he'll have a veteran presence on a team that'll need a good goalie, but he's not that, I don't think he's that all encompassing marketing magnet that Marc-Andre Fleury was. So to me, that's the other wrinkle in this conversation.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. You're right, Sean. 100%. So that'll be interesting to see what happens here with that goaltending situation. Now let's get to the East. Let's motor through the East here a little bit. Boston wins the series 4-1 against Washington. To me, that was a series where the Bruins were coming in feeling really good, and they were healthy, and they had the goaltending, and they had no questions about any of those things. Whereas Washington was banged up. Ovechkin, we knew, was hurt. I think Oshie was a little banged up. Kuznetsov was on the COVID list. The goaltending was an issue. Vanecek gets hurt in game one. I mean, so many things were playing against Washington. I'm not surprised at all what happened in this series because of all of those things. Is this kind of how you saw it, guys, playing out as well? Nick, Sean, is that how you saw it playing out?
Yeah, finally I got one right. I can actually say yes. That's what I thought. So I'm going to go out on top on that one. But yeah, basically for the reasons that you outlined, you know, I had questions about goaltending in the first place, and then you get an injury in there. And, you know, if I'm Washington, I'm disappointed Mantha didn't make more of an impact. Mm-hmm. I watched him a lot in Detroit and kind of nodded my head as things were going on. Yeah, you know, but Boston, you know, I think becomes intriguing now, right? So we haven't seen a Boston Islanders series since what? Like a long time.
Long time.
Yeah. Since Clark Gillies and Terry O'Reilly went at it, maybe.
Right. Yeah. So I'm loving that. You know, the Nassau, it's just going to be awesome, right? So, you know, I'm looking forward to that series. But go ahead, Sean. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say that it has been forever, and you think about it. I mean, they're two really revered franchises with a ton of history, and then, you know, you started to mention it. You're going to put the atmospheres in there. Like, the Garden was starting to get back to where it was. They're not at full capacity, but, you know, people are starting to get excited about this team when I think they might have had reservations in the first round just because of some of Boston's recent history. And then, my God, you put the Coliseum in there. Wow. You know, last night, you guys know from talking to me, I'm a huge soccer fan, and I have been since I was 10 years old, English soccer since I was 10 years old. And the thing that made me fall in love with English soccer was the crowds. I didn't even know what was going on when I first started watching it on PBS, but the crowd was like a living organism. They had songs for every player. They had chants. They stood and they shook the whole game. There's nothing like that in North American sports. Football isn't like that. You go to MLS games, they're somewhat like that. They're trying to copy the European culture. But to me, the Coliseum is such an organic thing, and it's the closest thing to that. Nobody sits. The building shakes. They have songs for half the players already, and the yes chant and everything they do. I don't know that there's another atmosphere in any sport that's quite like what the Coliseum is, especially because it's so small and you're so on top of each other, and that roof is so low that it's highly intimidating. I mean, I remember covering the Penguins the last time they played there, and the Islanders got the better of them. And we talked about bad matchups in the first round. This was a horrible matchup for the Penguins. But I remember being unsettled as I tried to write because of the noise. I can't imagine trying to play in front of it.
Yeah, I was listening to the game, right? Like, I was watching it, but listening to it. And like, trust me, I've not taken the fans for granted. I've missed it so much. A, not being at the rink, and B, not having the energy. It's what I love about the playoffs, especially, right? Just the energy of the crowd and the buzz and the, you know, I love it, right? I love going to Vegas and having my cup rattle, right? Like, while I'm in the press box. And to hear those Islanders fans, like the Hey Bailey, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I love it. Like, it brings tears to my eyes, like missing it, right? And cannot wait. And the positive is that it's coming back, right? It's spring, right? The grass is sprouting, there's leaves on the trees, like, we're coming back to life. And I know it's a tangent we've got off on here, but like, I think honestly, of anything we've talked about, it's the most important thing to me, like getting back to that energy.
I agree 100%. And I said it on Twitter last night, that I said two things on Twitter last night, Wednesday night, as that game was going on. Number one, I don't care about what anybody thinks about that building, how dingy it's been. It's not so dingy now, they refurbished a little bit, but how dingy it's been. I am going to miss Nassau Coliseum. It is, like you said, Sean, it is one of a kind in the NHL right now. It's old school. It's so different. So I'm going to miss it. And honestly, I also said this, in the past 5 years, as brilliant as it was for the Islanders and their new ownership group to hire Lou Lamoriello, who then hired Barry Trotz, those two moves, the best thing that the Islanders did was move their home games back to Nassau Coliseum, because you will not. Barclays Center, nice arena. You wouldn't get that atmosphere at Barclays Center the way you get it. The roof's too high, number one. And the tried and true, passionate parking lot Islander fan is not going to Barclays Center. He's just not. And they didn't all the time. They might have in the playoffs, but it wouldn't have been the same. The good thing about it, and I know we're off on a tangent here about the Islanders, the good thing about it is, in the new building at Belmont, UBS Center, the roof is going to be low. They're going to try to recreate that atmosphere, but not with 13 or 14,000 in the building, with more like 18, 19, 20,000 in the building. So that is going to be very interesting. It's not going to be the Coliseum. It's not going to have the history of the Coliseum. They're going to have to make new history there, but the roof's going to be low and that sound is going to reverberate around the building.
Yeah, as a Detroit guy, it reminds me a lot of the Joe and Little Caesars Arena, right? And like, it was time, and it's time, for Nassau too, right? Like, I grew up at the Joe, loved the Joe. Nothing will be like the Joe to me. It was dingy. It was our dingy, right? It was an awesome place to watch a hockey game. Same with the Coliseum, but it's time, right? And I'm excited for the Islanders to have a first-class facility, a permanent home, do it right. So, like, let's keep that in perspective too.
Yeah, and I also think that Islander fans are going to embrace the opportunity to make a new home. They weren't given that opportunity when they moved. Like, that was a desperation measure. It was something that had to be done, spur of the moment almost. And their home was taken away from them. There was no voice in it. So I think they're going to embrace the opportunity to bring a lot of traditions over and maybe start some new ones. But I'll tell you the one thing I won't miss about the Coliseum before we leave is the gymnastics that you have to do to get into your press box seat. And this is a very highly inside hockey thing, but you have to be really limber to try and get in your seats at that. When that place is crowded during a playoff game, you're in a lot of trouble. So, and I'm not the most limber guy. So as we get deeper into the playoffs and hopefully we get to go again, I won't miss that part of it.
It is like the Joe's, the Joe, they forgot the press box, right? So they built this press box like it was forgotten. So they took out like a couple rows of seats. They built this press box and it was notoriously tight.
Yeah.
Right. And you had to sit on a bar, like it was like a, I don't know, a plastic bar stool, right? And you had these poles behind you. And I'll tell you a little funny story. Like I didn't, you know, sometimes it was hot in there and you'd sweat and the scouts and everybody was all jammed together. And I didn't always get along well with Scotty Bowman. I don't think I was his favorite reporter, but there was one night where he got the corner seat. Like, I think he was with the Blackhawks. It was after his time in Detroit. You get the corner seat. He's against the pole. You have to squeeze by him and bump his seat and then stand in line for the one stall bathroom. That's it for the entire press box between periods. And everybody's bumping by him. And I looked at Scotty and I go, "You're the greatest coach of all time, have more wins than anybody else, and this is the seat they give you." And he just laughed. I think it's the only time in my life I made Scotty Bowman laugh.
And it also, by the way, the Joe had the world's largest bag of popcorn. They did have that too. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
I have sodium in my veins.
We got off on a tangent there, but let's get back, because let's ask a question about the team the Islanders beat. Because this is the elephant in the room question going on in the National Hockey League right now. Is this it for the Pittsburgh Penguins? No. Like, is the run over? They've lost 15 of their last 20 playoff games.
No, it can't be. When you have Crosby and Malkin, like, it can't be. And
we've been saying that for a long time.
Well, I understand that. And it's a good point. But they also hired Burke and Hextall. You think ownership is going to be like, "Oh yeah, let's break this up"?
No.
Right.
I don't think they'll break it up. No.
As long as you have Crosby, you're going to try to win. They need a goalie. Okay. Like, they didn't, you know, that was the glaring issue, especially the last couple games. So they need a goalie. They got to solve that. They've got other issues, but like, goaltending might have changed everything right for them in that series. So no way, like they're not done. And things ebb and flow. I remember, you know, they went through a down spell before and they came back. And I remember when they hired Jim Rutherford was supposed to be over the hill, couldn't manage the cap, past his prime. And then they won two Stanley Cups. Right. So I'm not saying that will happen again. But I'm certainly, convinced that they're going to try to make that happen again.
I'm convinced they're going to try and make it happen too. And I think they should. I think you owe that to that core that's delivered so much. But the one thing that scares me is, look, Sidney Crosby's a really smart hockey player. Chris Letang's a really smart hockey player. If Jenny Malkin's a really passionate hockey player, he doesn't always play smart. And I think you saw that in this series. He took some penalties that really, really hurt them, but that's who he is. He's a very emotional player. And they thrive off that emotion, but none of them have the wheels that they had in the past.
And
we're seeing right now with the Tampa Bay Lightning, with the Colorado Avalanche and teams like that, that speed is where the NHL is going, and they're getting further and further away from it. I mean, that is a plodding team when you look at it, and when you look at the way they played against the Islanders, there was no breakaway speed. There were almost no breakaways. And look, the Islanders are a suffocating defensive team, and we all understand that. And again, I still say that's a horrible matchup for them, and they knew it going in between having to play those games at the Island and the system that Barry Trotz plays, and the fact that they just physically manhandled Sidney Crosby the whole series. I mean, every time they could get a lick on him, they did. Every time they could push him after the whistle, they did. It's got to get tiring at some point. So I thought it was a horrible matchup. I think, you know, same kind of thing as Vegas. If they drew either one of those other teams, they're still playing. You know, they might be playing a game seven against Boston if that had been the case. But, you know, you have to do it this way. And it may never pay off again, but it doesn't matter. And I don't know how you break it up at this point. What's the value in trying to get these guys? It's only for a team that thinks they can win now. Nobody else is going to be like, oh yeah, I mean, because you're not moving Crosby, so it's one of those two other pieces, and one has been injured a lot in Letang, and like I said, like, are you ever going to get enough to justify it? And I don't think you can.
Nick, I'm going to go back to something you said. When they got Rutherford, you know, they hit that lull, they got Jim Rutherford, they hired him, they were able to re-energize it, right? And they did. Problem is Sidney Crosby is going to be 34 years old. Evgeny Malkin is going to be 35 years old. Chris Letang's 34 years old. When they re-energized it, those guys were just entering their 30s, very much in the primes of their career. Now you're going to try to re-energize it again with them on very much in the back nine of their careers. Great players. We saw Crosby this year. I mean, what a season Sidney Crosby had, right? He's not done by any stretch of the imagination. He is not done. But you're still going to try to re-energize around this core. That's why Brian Burke was brought in. That's why Ron Hextall was brought in. There was to see what was going to happen for the remainder of this season and then rebuild around, you know, trying to, maybe not rebuild is not the right word, but re-energize around the core. Because I think Jim Rutherford, we don't know, but I think Jim Rutherford had other ideas, you know? So they're going to try to do it. I just think when you're trying to re-energize it around a core of guys in their mid-30s, it's a heck of a lot harder to do that than do it in a around a core of a guys in their early 30s and late 20s.
Yeah. I mean, look, no question about it. Right. And I think the odds are against them, but again, A, goaltending can solve some issues. B, you're going to have to get lucky, or, you know, either in the draft, you know, have some, you know, young player surprise you and come up, or, you know, make some trade, you know, and find a way. It's all about the supporting cast, right?
Yeah.
And you can add speed that way. You know, you surround them with speed. You know, Phil Kessel was an example of that, where, you know, you're able to pull off a deal and you get this speedy guy who gives you depth and scoring. I don't know if there's another Phil Kessel out there, but that's the best example I can bring up. I don't think it's easy by any stretch. I don't, you know, I'm not putting my, you know, my money on them just because of the competition in the league. But like, I think Sean makes the point. I don't think they have a choice, right? And I don't think that's ownership's mindset either.
And Nick, I mean, you saw it happen firsthand, so it can happen. I mean, the Red Wings did that at the end. Stevie Y was at the end. Nick was at the end, and they were able to patchwork a team together to win.
I thought about bringing that up, but the problem with that comparison is then you start picking that apart, right? And number one, they got extremely lucky with Datsyuk and Zetterberg, right? They found a sixth rounder and a seventh rounder who probably should go to Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. right? And Lidstrom was still Lidstrom, like, through that entire period. Like, he was still just an elite, you know, maybe one of the, you know, top three defensemen of all time. But your point is valid in that. And people, like, again, I've become this Ken Holland defender, but if you look at their cup teams from 97, 98, 2002, and 2008, only five members were part of all four of those teams. And none of them were named Yzerman, Shanahan, Fedorov, Larionov, right? They turned over that entire roster, you know, Lidstrom was the linchpin, right? And then they got really lucky in the draft with Dotzer and Zetterberg, who replaced essentially Yzerman and Fedorov, right? So what, that's kind of where was the genesis of my point. The Penguins need to get lucky in the draft. Like, they need to find a couple players who can become, you know, like they got, you know, like a Gensel, right? Who comes up and becomes an impact player. Like, they need to find those guys and they need to make some smart moves and turn it over. But like the Red Wings did turn it over dramatically into 2002 and then again into 2008.
They have two picks, the Penguins, in the first six rounds of the draft.
That kind of hurts my
price you theory. Pay for winning.
But it is. And that's the whole point of the system.
Yep.
Right. Like, it's the whole point. Like, you're supposed to get bad. You are. Like, that's it's how it's designed. Right. And the Red Wings, they, you know, we could turn this into a Red Wings podcast, but they defied gravity for, you know, they had a 25 season playoff streak. I say they defied gravity for half that. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, they, the system was designed to drag them down. And they were able to defy it because Lidstrom was so special, and they got lucky with two, you know, key players deep in the draft, and they were able to turn it over. Right. And I don't think they get enough credit for that, but it's a rarity. It's very difficult to do.
It's difficult to do. The Penguins aren't defying gravity yet, but you bring up the goaltender. That's going to be, again, Tristan Jarry had a good regular season. He just didn't have a good playoffs. Does that mean he's not a good goalie? You know,
maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. But, it's going to, you know,
look at Fleury. Like, this is the funny part to me is Fleury got yanked for lesser sins. Right. And now it all depends on your options. If you have a better backup, maybe Jari's out of that game. Right. But
right.
You know, they got rid of Fleury. Right. They had no problem with that, you know, because they had Matt Murray. Right. So, you know, if DeSmith is healthy, he's probably in there. You know what I mean? So it's all context, but you know, I'm just, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe they shouldn't judge Jari too harshly, but it was pretty bad. You know, and they need to take a hard look at it.
Well, look, if they had Casey DeSmith, I think it's a different thing. You can breathe him at some point. Tristan Jarry was really good down the stretch for them.
And he was.
There was a point in the season where he was on the fringes of the Vezina conversation. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think you got to give this a little bit more breathing room. I think certainly there's some concerns in the way that he kind of lost the plot late in that game. The last goal he gave up was just, it went right through him. But, you know, it's funny because I know Dan's going to transition to the North next. And I was thinking about it. We're talking about the Penguins and we're talking about them being on the back end. The Toronto Maple Leafs, who are up 3-1 on Montreal and play tonight, Thursday, they're starting to remind me of the young Penguins before all their success, right? They, except for they don't really have a Marc-Andre Fleury, but otherwise they have all those same pieces. They're really young. They're starting to feel their oats a little bit, and they have a decent sized window before they get into all kinds of trouble. The trouble that affected the Penguins, right? Salary cap, injuries, all those other things. So, you know, I find the Maple Leafs to be in a really interesting place. And this could be the year after so many disappointments that they get beyond the first round. And then, you know, things have kind of drawn right for them to get out of the North Division and into the Stanley Cup semifinals.
Yeah. I mean, the Tavares injury is a big one. You know, I know he's skated now, so let's see where he's at. But what I like about Toronto too is, you know, they have the old guy element as well, right? And those guys chipped in to help them win a game, right? I wouldn't expect them to do it often, but it's encouraging to see that because they have some depth and they have some support for those great young players. You know, you could pick your comparison, right? Are they the young Penguins? Are they the young Blackhawks, right? Like, I see some Kane and Marner, right? I don't know that Taves and there's not a good comparison there with Matthews. Matthews is his own beast. But I mean, they have so much talent, and I do think it breaks well for them. I think it's a shame there's no fans up north, like, you know, all the waiting that they've done and they can't be there live. But, the other hesitation I have is the Jets is I think that's a, you know, the Leafs should go to the Final Four, but like, man, I didn't see the Jets beating the Oilers. Like, that was like, if you'd ask me which series are you certain on, that might have been at the top of the list, and I was completely, utterly wrong. Just the way the Jets fumbled down the stretch and didn't play well against Edmonton all year, and then look what happens, right? So they've got a great goalie. So let's see how that, you know, Leafs offense does against him. But yeah, I mean, like, the other thing about Toronto, they're another team that's just fun to watch too, right? Like, they just are. So, yeah. You know, it's enjoyable to watch them and see them win just because it's enjoyable.
Well, the thing I'll say about Toronto is, and I don't mean this as in a disrespectful way to them, they finally got a clue, right? I mean, they have a clue on how to win now in the playoffs. And I'm not saying here, sitting there saying here, they're going to go on and dominate all the way through, but
they won three games, Dan.
They have a clue because of how they're playing.
It's early.
They've won three games against the Bruins in multiple years.
But do you not see a difference in how they're playing?
Of course. And it's what Nick said. It's the veteran element. It's those players that have taught those young kids not to get too high, not to get too low, and not to get stupid on the ice. And give things away. You can't give things away in the playoffs. That's the biggest thing. Winnipeg didn't give things away against Edmonton in the playoffs. And Edmonton did. You think about that game four, Archibald takes that penalty.
Gave it right to him.
Gave the game right to him. They score on the power play. Now they got game a little three, bit of confidence. Yeah. Bing, bing. They're tied, and then it's anybody's game. And you're going into overtime. And which goalie do you tap on the shoulder in overtime and say, I'm going to put a quid on you. It's Connor.
I don't want to get too carried away with the Leafs. Okay. Montreal's not a good team. It was a good matchup for Toronto. They haven't even won the series yet. Like, let's see if they get past Winnipeg. And more importantly, let's see if they could get past the third round. Right. Like, they didn't have to play Boston. They haven't played a Tampa, a Carolina. Like, let's see them. Let's see. Like,
100%.
Ask me later. 100%. I'm not ready to.
100%. But I'm watching them play, and they're playing more of a playoff brand of hockey, regardless of the opponent. And maybe the opponent is kind of bringing more of it out in them, that they're, like Sean said, not giving things away, not giving up opportunities, not, you know, killing themselves. And I mean, what do teams that win in the playoffs do? They don't hurt themselves. And that's what Sean was saying. And I haven't seen, look, we're a long ways away from proclaiming the Toronto Maple Leafs have arrived. They're here. They're done. They're everything. But they're showing me something that I haven't seen from them in the past. I know they had won those games against Boston and all that, but then they gave it away. They kept giving it away. And I know they haven't played the rest of the league, and they haven't even played in front of fans. And so they don't have those emotional momentum swings in games. There's a lot still there to go through, but just the style of play to me suggests they finally have a clue on how to win games.
I would like to see the Toronto Maple Leafs play a team that can score goals. Right. Right. Cause you have Jack Campbell, and he hasn't really been tested. Right. And he's never played in the playoffs. And then you have Freddie, who's been out for, you know, a long period of time. I think they're in a lot more trouble with a team that can score goals. And I don't know if that team's Winnipeg. I mean, you could see some 2-1 games all the way through the series. I think they've shown that they can shut anybody down. When you shut down Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you got to be a little worried if you're Toronto and you finish this series and you move on. But the one thing I have learned from this, and I'm semi patting myself on the back, but not fully, is I did not pick the Winnipeg Jets in my predictions. I should have. And Dan can testify, for the last 2 weeks, what is my main message been? If anybody can beat the Edmonton Oilers, it's Paul Maurice.
Yeah. Why didn't you pick him?
Because all the reasons Nick said, 2-7, they'd given up like 50 goals against them. You know, they were on a 7-game losing streak going into the playoffs. They looked clueless. Nick Ehlers wasn't playing. Like, they looked horrendous. But I said, as horrendous as they look, Paul Maurice can figure it out. And he did. He figured out all the matchups he needed. He figured out how to get his team on an emotional plane they needed to be on. I don't know that there's many coaches left in the tournament that are better than Paul Maurice when it comes to all those things. Look, you got to put Barry Trotz in that conversation. but each of them have done it without superstars. Like you want to say Mike Sullivan, he's won two cups, and I think Mike's a great coach. He's had a few guys where you could just throw him over the board and say, make something happen for me. And you know, Paul hasn't always had that, and Barry certainly hasn't always had that. And they find ways to do things. To me, I think they're maybe the best coaches in pure X's and O's in the league right now in the playoffs. And I'm thinking about putting Bruce Cassidy into that, but I need a little bit more.
And now he's got time to sit and watch and game plan for this next series, right?
Yeah.
So
can we talk about the other team though? Like the Oilers got swept. How do the Edmonton Oilers get swept? I know, Kenny Holland is, you talked about him, Nick, the reverence for Kenny Holland and what he did with Detroit and all that. This man's got his work cut out for him with this team. You got Connor and you got Leon, and Darnell Nurse is terrific. And that's great to build around. But there's so much that has to get built around this team. And they saw firsthand what regular season good can do for you in the playoffs.
Well, in fairness, there's an overtime element here where it's flip a coin a bit, right? So the fact they got swept, it might be a little misleading, right? But
they got swept.
But they got swept, and Connor and Leon got bottled up, mm-hmm. and it's the same story from pre-Ken Holland, right? You've got two of the best players in the world. How do you surround them? Right. It's all about the supporting cast, and it's a massive challenge. Massive. Right. I think Darnell Nurse took a big step this season. But they need what Sid, the easiest comparison is Crosby and Malkin. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's your jumping off point. So what did those two have? Right. With the years that they won, they had depth. Right? They had depth. They had a supporting cast, and that's what he's got to build around them. And it's going to be difficult to do just because of the nature of the beast.
What do you do with guys like Tyson Barrie and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, pending UFA guys? I know he wants to re-sign Mike Smith. I mean, you're re-signing an old goaltender. Is that because there's no better options, or did Mike Smith show you? I mean, Mike Smith
had a good year. He did have a great year. He did.
He had a great year, but are you going to do it again?
Yeah. I mean, that's, Holland's weakness is loyalty, and he loves
it. Is he going to do it again?
I mean, yes, there's no
question. And if you think you're a team that can go deep with a couple of changes, are you going to ride a 40-year-old goaltender with no playoff success four rounds into the playoffs? To me, that's a tough sell. I mean, they've gotten some pieces. I think they've added some pieces. I think they're a little further away than people think.
And this isn't about Connor and Leon. No. This is not about them at all. I've heard some talk about, they got to learn how to play like Yzerman play it. No.
Yzerman didn't play like McDavid
ever.
And no, when he was young, everybody talks about Steve Yzerman being the consummate two-way player and professional. When the Red Wings were bad, he was an offense guy.
Yeah.
He was part of the problem, right? Am I wrong, Nick?
Well, I mean, he was. I mean, he had 155 points one season. I believe the only players who've had more than that are named Gretzky and Lemieux. They did it multiple times. I mean, he was a stud. He was an incredible offensive player. How much is myth and how much is reality? Well, it's absolutely reality that they thought about trading him. It's absolute reality that Bowman sat him down and he changed his game. It's also reality that it coincided with his age curve. Right. You'll see the stats folks post his age curve, and it's pretty traditional how his scoring declined. But there's no question that Steve changed his game as he aged and became a really good defensive forward. He won a Selkie. And I do think that affected the rest of the team. I think that's true. But the bottom line is Yzerman had to suffer through hard times as a great player, one of the leading scorers of all time. And it was all about his supporting cast, mm-hmm. right? No player in this league, any era, can win on his own. And you look at the Red Wings' maturation, it was all about, Lidstrom becomes elite, and Fedorov and Shanahan. And then, we discussed earlier in the podcast, that turned over. But if you look at any year the Red Wings won, they had tons of depth, right? Great supporting cast. And even years they had a great supporting cast, they lost. So, you know, we look at Chicago. Like, we could just sit here all day and do this, right? You have a core. Like, I always think it starts with you have to have a core or a mini core of elite players. And then how do you surround them?
How do you surround them?
Even then, there's no guarantees, right? But that's the clear challenge in Edmonton. And, you know, can Holland do it? I don't know.
If anybody tries to change Connor McDavid's game, they're insane.
No, well, look, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, you've got...
He can't change.
He doesn't need to be a Selke winner. He does not. Okay. You've got the most dynamic, best offensive player in the league, like in years, right? Like the fastest player with the puck maybe ever. You know, I can't compare him to Orr. I'm not old enough, but like, no, let Connor be Connor and like worry about surrounding him and Leon with better supporting cast.
He's not a defensive liability. I mean, my goodness, not at all. Anyway, we touched on every series before we get out of here. And Nick, thanks for doing this. This is great. You brought up the name Gretzky. So let's talk about the one other big story going on in the National Hockey League right now. And for fans, obviously, and viewers, Turner Sports hires Wayne Gretzky to be a part of their studio show. I am so intrigued by this because what makes TNT and the NBA on TNT, that studio show, so great is the chemistry that and the entertainment, right? But also the analysis, like Barkley and Kenny Smith and Shaq, they have great chemistry and they were all great players and they bring all that. So Gretzky is a terrific hire. He's got the highest hockey IQ of all time. He's going to bring terrific analysis. Now, who do you surround him with to bring the entertainment value up? And I'm not saying Wayne's not, can't be entertaining. He can be, but then who else is going to be on that show? I love the start. Like, I can't wait to listen to Wayne Gretzky break down games with no team affiliation. How many times have you heard Gretzky talk about other teams, but there's a hesitation in what he's saying because he's been affiliated with the Edmonton Oilers? There's no team affiliation anymore. He resigned that position so he can just talk the game. And I think it's going to be really, really intriguing to see what he says. But now you got to bring the entertainment too. So who else are they going to bring in?
Charles Barkley.
Well, yeah, that's a no-brainer.
I thought that was like this ridiculous kind of pie in the sky notion. Now I think it could happen, right? Yeah. Like, I really do. And I think it could be awesome because here's what I think about Wayne. He's definitely going to draw eyeballs because he's Wayne, right? But that's just a start. Right. That's not going to keep eyeballs. Wayne is incredibly classy. He likes to please everybody. He makes everybody happy. That's who Wayne Gretzky is, ambassador for the game. Right. So I doubt we're going to see like these like hot takes from Wayne or biting criticisms. And I don't think people should expect that. What his challenge is going to be is to be honest. Right. But I think he can play the straight man and give you great sort of high level hockey analysis that you're not going to get anywhere else if he allows himself to do that, and he needs to do that. But he needs, like you said, he needs a foil, right? Like if he's going to be a straight man and give you the kind of that stuff, he needs somebody to play off of. He's buddies with Barkley. Barkley loves the game. Like we were all in Nashville during the Nashville Pittsburgh Stanley Cup final. So Barkley goes on TNT and says, I would rather watch the Stanley Cup playoffs than the NBA playoffs, right? And Steve Mayer, mad genius at the NHL, goes, oh, he invites Charles Barkley to the Stanley Cup final. Barkley gets up on the podium and talks hockey, and he genuinely likes it. He, you know, like, I love that. I would love an outside perspective. Like, a guy who knows pro sports, right, who likes hockey, who, you know, has a relationship with Gretzky, I think it would be a home run. I really do. If it's not Barkley, it needs to be someone, though, that has that energy and has can have some fun. Chelios would be interesting because he's buddies with Gretzky, and like Chelios was not afraid to say anything. It always could go off the rails the other way. Like you think of Chelios and Hall, those guys, like they'll say anything. But I'm intrigued to see what they do. But I would love to see a little bit of outside voice, just something a little different element than we've had. Like, why not? Right. Like let's try something new here and try to take the game in a different direction.
And I think the key is going to be the host.
right? When you look at the TNT and basketball, and I don't watch a lot of basketball, my son's into it, so I've seen a couple of segments lately, and no offense to the person who hosts that, I can't think of his name at the moment.
Ernie Johnson,
but he's brilliant. Like, that thing goes off the rails all the time, and he brings it back. He lets it go when it needs to go, when Shaq and you know, Barkley are crazy, he lets them do that. And then when it needs to come back, it comes back. And then, you know, the other day they had on a guest, and he was able to eloquently ask questions and again bring it back when they tried to take the guests too far away. So I think if you're going to bring in Gretzky and you're going to bring in other pieces, there needs to be that band leader that's capable of making all those things mesh and to bring out the best in Gretzky, because sometimes he's, especially early on, anybody, they're going to need some help in understanding when to strike and when to lay back. And so that's going to be the pieces Turner tries to put this together that's going to be crucial to the whole thing.
The other thing I love about this is, you know, so the reports were that ESPN tried to get Gretzky. They didn't, right? He ends up at TNT. But now ESPN has to respond, mm-hmm. right? So, like, and that's the best part about this whole media deal, right? Now you've got two that kind of compete and play off each other, right? So how does ESPN respond, right? What do they do, right? And I think it is time to try some new things and not just do what we've always done. Right. So I'll be watching with great interest.
Yeah, no question. I would love, by the way, we can end on this. I would love a studio show with Chris Chelios, Brett Hull, and Wayne Gretzky and Charles Barkley with a host. That would be a lot of fun.
Uh-huh. And they all know each other. They all know each other.
Whatever it is, whoever they bring in, the key thing for Gretzky is you can't bring in somebody who's going to be a yes man to Gretzky. They got to bring in somebody who mm-hmm. will challenge Gretzky and not just agree with everything he says, because that's what makes Barkley and Shaq and Kenny Smith great.
Or whatever, you know, what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, somebody's
like, he's a deity, but he, you know, yeah. On a show like that, like, he can't be, right. He's got to be like, I think of, you know, the commercials, right? Like, you think of like the Samuel L. Jackson and mm-hmm. Spike Lee and Charles Barkley commercials, right? Like, why are those so funny? Right. Cause they come from sort of different walks, but they're buddies and like they play off each other. Like those are good commercials. That's the kind of energy. Right. And like, we're trying to grow this game to get out of, I hate to say this, but like out of our rut a little, right. Like we have like the strength of the NHL and hockey. Is we have this passionate core fan base, and the weakness is we have this passionate core fan base. Like we need to grow that. Right. We need more of a casual audience. Right. And I think that what will be interesting is ESPN and TNT have the reach and creativity and potential to do that. Now, how are they going to execute? Right. So I think it'll be fun to watch.
We can end it there. Nick, this was great. Thanks for hopping on with us for, I think we hit a full hour on this, just talking hockey. So it's good stuff. And, more games to come. We got game 7 to Friday night. You'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with Carolina and Toronto and second round coming up. So everybody enjoy the hockey.